Today is August 13, 2012. This is Desiree Hargis on behalf of the H.J. Lucher Stark Center for Physical Culture and Sport. Today I'm interviewing Rudy Haluza about his experiences in the 1968 U.S. Olympic Games. Rudy, can you begin with when and where you were born?
I was born in Middletown, New York, in 1931.
And did you grow up there, or can you tell me about where you grew up in your early childhood?
I was born there while my mother was on visiting her mother in Port Jervis, so I never went back.
Oh.
Other than to visit my grandmother's farm in Port Jervis,
oh,
New York.
Okay. So where did you grow up then?
I grew up in Bayside, Long Island, New York, for my first 21 years, roughly.
And what are your earliest memories of participating in sports?
Oh, I started early in high school, track and cross country, and continued in college.
And how did you get into race walking?
While in college, I can't remember why, but I decided to give it a try. And as luck would have it, it was a handicap race, and I had a big handicap and won. So I said, well, maybe I'll continue.
That sounds like a good decision.
Pardon?
That sounds like a good decision.
Okay, well, it turned out to be, yes.
Yeah. So did you have any influences at the time, any other family members or good friends who were in track and field or race walking that anybody that was encouraging you?
No, none of my family at all. No encouragement, no anything. I just was on my own.
So what drew you to participate in track and field in high school in the first place?
I really don't know. I just thought it was a good sport, and I enjoyed doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't care much for the other sports, contact sports like football and whatnot. In fact, I still don't care for them.
Yeah. Well, did you have other friends who were also on track and field team, or any other friends who did race walking when you were in high school?
No, just competing in the normal dual meets and cross country meets.
Mm-hmm. Once you got into race walking, were there any major influences within the sport, any coaches or predominant race walking athletes that influenced you?
Well, it was definitely the athletes, especially Henry Lascelles, who was well renowned in walking circles in the 40s and 50s. And we lived close enough, so we trained quite a bit on weekends and with other members of the my club, the New York Pioneer Club.
The New York Pioneer Club?
Right.
Okay. And so I read that you went to Queens College and that you competed in race walking for Queens College. Is this what you did after high school?
Right. While I was at Queens, I started walking, and of course, that was while I was on a track and cross country team. So all the walking was separate from the college.
Oh, I see.
We had no walking team, in other words.
Okay, that makes sense. I was a little surprised when I read that. So you were actually on the cross-country, track and field and cross-country team.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about some of your major competitions or victories while you were competing in college.
My memories are faint, but a couple of races I remember was a City Hall at Coney Island race when we went across the Brooklyn Bridge. And it was a handicap, and I believe I had the fast time, but I didn't win. And there were several other local races that I won, but I can't put my finger on any of them.
Mm-hmm. I read that you won 10 AAU championships between 1957 and 1960.
Right.
That's quite an accomplishment.
Well, let's see. I think I went to my first national championship in Atlantic City, a 30 kilometer, I think it was in 52. And boy, was I sore after that, because I had never trained for that distance. But after that, as I said, I think I mentioned, or you know, I flunked out of college in 1953. And I didn't want to get drafted into the Army, so I took the pilot and navigator stay nine test for the Air Force and passed the navigator one. So I went to San Antonio for pre-flight training as a pre-flight navigator. That was in, April 53.
Mm. And so you were in the
Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead. You were in the Air Force and...
Right. I joined the Air Force and became a navigator. And at that time I was, you know, in training and I basically gave up walking for a couple of years.
And when did you resume walking?
I think I resumed in late 55 with thinking I might have a outside chance of making the 56 Olympic team.
And how did that go? Did you attend the trials in 56?
Right, the trials were in Pittsburgh, and I think I finished 12th.
Oh.
But anyway, after that, I decided I would continue to train, and I was at that time an instructor navigator in Harlingen, Texas, in South Texas. I don't know if you know, well, you're in Austin, you know where the valley is.
Yes, absolutely.
And hot and humid conditions, to say the least. And in 57, I traveled to Baltimore for the National 20 and won it. And I attribute it to the fact that I had been training in the heat and humidity of South Texas, and that's what we encountered in Baltimore in 57. So that was my first national championship.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I'm sure that the Texas heat and humidity had something to do with it. Only the toughest survive here.
You know, at that time, and I don't know when they started, but we weren't allowed to have a drink of water during the whole race.
Really?
Had to gut it out.
Why? What was the reasoning behind that?
For national championships, that was the rule.
That sounds like a very dangerous rule.
Well, as I recall, everybody survived. I don't know when they changed the rule, but they're allowed, you know, a drink now.
Mm-hmm. So I read that you were in the 1960 Olympic Games in Rome. Can you tell me a little bit about those trials and about the competition in Rome?
Okay, well, let's see. In 58, I went into pilot training. So I went from a navigator to pilot training and became a pilot for the Air Force. So my 58 was a kind of quiet year, but in 59, I got in good condition again and won the National 20 in Baltimore again and represented the U.S. versus the British U.S. versus Russia in their dual meet, the first time the Russians came to the U.S. in 59. The winner there was Vladimir Golubnichy, whom I met two times after that. Anyway, in 60, the Air Force sent all of his track and field athletes to Oxnard Air Force Base in California to train for the Olympics, or the Olympic trials. And I again won the National 20K in Baltimore, third time in Baltimore, and made the 60 Olympic team. Unfortunately, I came down with gastroenteritis during the race. And I don't think I've ever been as sick as I was when I finished the race. I was 24th.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. A Canadian who I beat in our trials by 1 minute finished ninth. So I thought I had a good chance of being in the top 10.
Mm.
But it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Okay, where are we now? We're 1960. Okay. Yep. After that, the Air Force sent me to England in 1961, where I competed for 3 years against the English race walkers, and that was great, racing them almost every weekend. In fact, as I raced the Olympic champ, Ken Matthews, in 1964, I raced him so many times, but naturally he always won.
And why do you say naturally he always won?
Because he was the top guy, the Olympic champion in 64.
I see.
I don't think he ever lost a race in England.
I see.
I did fairly well, but I never did reach tip-top form while I was there.
So you were in England until when?
I came back in 64 for the 64 trials in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And dehydrated in 64 and finished fifth, so I didn't quite make the team in 64.
Hmm. How many did they take from the trials? Did you have to be a top two or top three finisher?
It was a top three at the time.
Okay.
As I say, I dehydrated. I didn't drink enough before the race, because we couldn't drink anything during the race.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a nice warm day. And, as I say, I was fifth.
Mm-hmm. So, what were you thinking at that point? Were you thinking that you would just continue and try again in 68, or were you thinking?
No, I said, well, I'll keep going. 65 was a quiet year, but in late 66, the Air Force sent me to Omaha, Nebraska to get my degree. They call it the bootstrap program. And while in Omaha, and mainly over the winter of 65, 66, I was able to get in tip-top condition, the best condition I'd ever been in. Mainly, of course, I had nothing else to do other than study and pass the exams. My family was back home in Riverside, California at the time. And as a result, when I came back to California in early 66, I had my best year ever. I think I won 10 out of 12 races. I only lost the first and the last, finishing second. Four national championships. I won the USA versus the British Commonwealth meet in Los Angeles in, I think it was July of 66. So that was my best year ever.
Mm-hmm.
And 67, I had a change of career. I left the Air Force and joined United Airlines. So the racing was kind of quiet at that time until 68, when it became time again to try out for the Olympics.
And can you tell me about that process, about the trials and any challenges or?
Oh, as I say, I hardly raced at all in early 68. However, I was able to finish, I think it was 10th or something like that, in the trials, which gave us the privilege or whatever to go into training at Lake Tahoe with a track team. So I think it was about 12 of us were sent there along with the rest of the track and field athletes to Tahoe to train at high altitude. And the distance people thought it wasn't really the best place to train. So we ended up in Alamosa, Colorado, which is still at 7,500 feet. And we trained there. And between Tahoe and Alamosa, I was able to get into the best condition I've ever been in, I guess. And I think I finished second in the trials and made the team. And as I say, I didn't win any other races that year, as I recall. But apparently, for some reason, I must have been acclimated to altitude, because most people didn't do that well.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did your friends, family, and employer, or your community and hometown, how did everyone around you react to finding out that you made the Olympic team?
Well, let's see. Well, obviously, I was with United Airlines at the time, and in fact, I just got off probation months before. So everyone was very supportive. In fact, they even gave me the time off to go to the trials, etc. And I'm very grateful to United Airlines for that. And of course, my family was supportive. And well, that's about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned altitude training. Did you ever feel the effects of the high altitude when you first began altitude training? Did you notice any effects?
Well, just like everybody else, you have to get acclimated. And apparently I got acclimated fairly easily.
Good for you. Well, after the trials and while you were, in the training camp with the team, can you tell me about what your training was like during that period after the trials and before you went to the games?
Well, again, it was basically hard training in Alamosa. Interval work on the track to develop speed and distance work out in the road. We had a nice road course, not flat, but out and back. You go out five and back five or six or eight and back. So plenty of hard training, and then we gathered at Denver another few days to get issued our, uniforms, etc. And again, more hard training in Denver before we left for Mexico City.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're at race time, I think.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you just a couple other questions before we get to the race time.
Okay.
Do you remember in the interval between trials and going to the games in Mexico City, hearing anything about an Olympic project for human rights or any possible boycotts?
No. Mm-hmm. No. Don't remember anything at all about that.
Did you remember hearing anything about student protests and violence in Mexico City in the week before the games opened?
I think I had knowledge of it, but I didn't pay much attention.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that it wouldn't interfere with the games. The Mexicans would make sure of that.
Yeah. Well, what were your impressions of Mexico City and the Olympic Village when you first arrived?
I don't know how to answer that one. I had been to Mexico previously while I was stationed at Harlingen. Right across the border was Matamoros.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd been to Mexico, but I really didn't see much of it. And Mexico City, basically, it was just the Olympic Village. And I didn't I was able to walk outside the village for a short distance, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did you think of your accommodations at the Olympic Village?
That's a good story. I call it the barracks. And, cots all in one big or two big rooms or three. However, there was a sort of a little isolated room all by itself, which I think was either the laundry room or something like that, that had an entrance. And I took my mattress and put it on the floor, and I had my own private little room. No extraneous noises from all the other stuff outside. And I don't know if that helped or not, but I liked it that way. I'm kind of not a very social person otherwise.
Mm. And what was the food like there?
I guess it was okay. I didn't get sick.
Oh, that's good. That was actually my next question. A lot of people did get sick.
At my previous experience in Rome, I was very, very careful. So I didn't indulge in anything that would possibly let me come down with the trots or whatever.
I don't blame you, especially after Rome.
Well, after Rome, yeah. I don't think I've ever been as sick as I was when I finished that race anyway. So I was especially careful of the food. I'm a plain eater. I don't go for anything fancy, low-fat, high carbo and high protein diet, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are your memories or experiences of the opening ceremony in 68?
Well, I attended them. I was in the back in the barracks watching it on TV, and my wife and oldest son got my ticket and were able to watch them from the stands. So, as I say, I didn't get to see them, except on television.
Mm-hmm. So you said your wife attended with your older son?
Right, he was almost 10 at the time.
Oh, how wonderful. Did any of your other family members get a chance to attend?
No, the other two children were 8 and 6, so they had to stay home with a babysitter.
Oh, I bet they were jealous of the 10-year-old.
Yeah. So anyway.
Well, did you have any interactions with the Mexican people?
Basically, no.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go ahead and into the event. Can you tell me about the race and what happened?
Well, knowing that we wouldn't get a drop to drink during the race, I gulped down as much as I possibly could. I must have had at least 3 or 4 soda pops, 12 ounces Coke or Pepsi or orange, I can't remember. But I drank as much as I thought I could hold. And at the starting line, I hyperventilated. And I don't know if anybody else did, but I hyperventilated. And if you see any pictures of the start, you could see my puffed cheeks. I was pursing, I think they call it, trying to force more air into my lungs at a higher pressure to give me a slight advantage. And I think it worked, but I can't remember how long I was able to do it during the race, but I was trying to force more air into my lungs because of the altitude.
Mm.
Before I knew it, I found myself right up with the leaders after a mile or two. And I was able to stay with them and felt pretty good. I wasn't dehydrated. And so I think I had the lead at the 5K mark, just barely by a second maybe. And then I was right up there third for the 10 and 15K marks. But I weakened very slightly in the last 5K. I don't know if I outdid myself the first 3:15, or maybe I didn't have enough distance training. But anyway, I weakened slightly, and Pedraza shot by me. And he shot himself into second place, almost won the race. And he should have been disqualified, but wasn't. So I got chipped out of a bronze medal. I believe, and many other people believe the same thing.
Mm-hmm. I did read about that. And I read that you said, or maybe somebody said, that you might have lost the race, but you saved a stadium.
Well, I was in the stadium when it all happened. I think it was a half a lap behind the winner. But apparently the judges apparently had to have two judges agree in the last part of the race, and there was only one. But so he was not disqualified, and I think if he was, there would have been maybe another riot. So who knows?
So... yeah, I think the spectators, especially the Mexican national spectators that were there, they were probably pretty excited.
That's right. There was their first medal, and they were very excited. Very excited, to say the least. So, as I say, whether or not he should have been disqualified and what would have happened if he did, well, who knows?
Yeah. Well, that's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, was there anyone else on the team, either the U.S. Olympic team or the U.S. track and field team, with whom you were particularly close at the time?
Not really that close. They were all acquaintances, and naturally the walkers were the best of them. But, you know, I've been with them, many of them, in other track meets previously, so I knew them, and they knew me, but... basically, I was on my own with my family and trying to train, and I didn't socialize that much.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about the female athletes and what was it like for female athletes in 68? Do you have any recollections or reflections on that?
I didn't understand the what athletes?
The female athletes. What was
female.
It? What was it like for female athletes in 68? What are your recollections or reflections on that?
Not much. I really can't comment on that at all.
Mm-hmm. Were you aware of the gender verification testing that was going on in 68?
I vaguely recall it, but I wasn't paying much attention.
Mm-hmm. The women had to have their cheek swabbed for DNA or cells so that they could, determine positively whether or not they were female or not. And I was just wondering if you remembered that or if you had any reflections on that.
I really don't recall that at all, no.
Mm-hmm. So the 68 Games were, pretty much near the height of the Vietnam War and the Cold War. Do you have any reflections or recollections about the influences of the socio-political climate on the Games or any interactions with Soviet bloc athletes that you might have had?
Well, the only thing I can recall is that I was really hoping to beat the Russians because one of my former teammates, Ron Zinn, a West Point graduate, was killed in Vietnam in 1965. He finished, I think he finished sixth in the games in 64 at Tokyo. And I was trying to avenge his loss, but I came close, but I didn't quite do it. As far as the Russians go, Golubnichi won the race, and that was the third time I'd raced him, and naturally he won all three, but I was only a minute and 2 seconds behind him, and that was about as close as any American has ever been, other than the fourth place. So I gave it my all, but I weakened a little bit in the last couple of miles.
Well, it's still quite an accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
So 68 was also the first summer games at which drug testing was implemented. Do you remember hearing about the drug testing or did you have any experiences with that at the time?
If I did, I don't remember. I probably was tested, but I have no idea. I don't remember at all.
Mm-hmm. The 68 games are also famous because of the salute that Smith and Carlos did on the medal podium. Did you happen to witness that salute or hear about it while you were there?
I did witness it, and I didn't think much of it. I thought maybe it was inappropriate, and they found that out, too, when they were sent home. But anyway,
So you were there in the stadium?
Yes. Obviously, I watched most of the other races well after mine and before.
And so why did you think it was inappropriate?
Well, it isn't the thing to do while on a victory stand.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to take your medal and say thank you and leave. When I grew up in Bayside, I lived just a block away from a black entourage or a neighborhood. So I grew up with blacks, and I have no problem with them. Some of them I went to school and were my friends, but I sympathize with them, but I don't think they should have done that.
Did you know at the time what their reasoning was?
Not exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Just they were discriminated against, or the whole black country was discriminated against, and they obviously it was wrong, but it's much improved now.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did you think of the IOC's response at the time, or the Olympic Committee's response at the time?
Well, mixed feelings. They were part of the team, they should have stayed, but yet they did something that should have got them ejected, so I can't say I would agree or disagree.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are your memories of the media at those games? Did you have any interaction with journalists?
Very little. My hometown paper in the Long Island Star Journal, I was called, I guess, wrote it up a little bit. And I guess the LA Times did, since I was living in Riverside at the time. But I don't think I was ever interviewed at all.
That's interesting. Well, you said you got to attend most of the, or many of the other track and field events. Can you tell me about any specific memories of some of those events that you attended and witnessed?
Oh, yeah, right. The triple jump, obviously. What's his name? I said a record in triple jump. I witnessed that.
Oh, Bob, are you talking about Bob Beamon?
Bob Beamon, right.
Mm-hmm.
And also I witnessed Toomey's victory in the decathlon. That was quite an experience watching him. And the 1500, again, name slipped me. The congressman.
Jim Ryan.
Ryan, right. I watched his race, and that was a disappointment, too, because I thought he should have won. But the high altitude training, I think, of the Ethiopians and Kenyans helped them quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, are there any other memorable or interesting experiences that you'd like to tell me about?
Oh, geez. As I say, my memory is very poor right now, and if it were memorable, I think I would remember.
Okay. Well, what about the closing ceremony? Did you witness that?
That's another thing. We were sent home before the closing ceremony, so I didn't witness it.
Oh, why was that done?
Apparently, they couldn't send all the athletes back at the same time, so they shuffled some of us off early.
Okay, that's interesting.
And I think the same thing happened in Rome.
Oh, wow. Huh, I didn't know that. So what did you do right after the games? So what was your homecoming like, and what did you do after that?
It was very quiet. On my garage door was a big sign, "Welcome home, Rudy." But there was nobody there to greet me. Obviously, they didn't know when I was going to arrive. So, but that was my welcoming. Not much.
Well, what about...
All my workers obviously were happy and congratulate me. And as I say, I was working for United at the time.
And how many years did you end up working for United?
Just short of 25.
Oh, that's wonderful. When did you retire?
91.
Oh, okay. Well, can you tell me a little bit about what happened with your race walking career after 68, some of the highlights there,
we had one big disappointment. I did very little racing after that, but I can't even remember how many races or what I entered. But came 72, I said, I'm going to give it a go again. And I said, well, maybe I'm not fast enough for the 20K, I'll try the 50. So I trained for the 50 and qualified for both races. And in the 20K, was maybe 4 days before the 50, I said, well, I'll try this as a tune-up. And lo and behold, I found myself in third place. And I said, holy smoke. And I said, well, let's go for it. So I ended up second and got disqualified. If I would have settled for third place, I had an easy third, I could have made the team. Instead, I went for broke and got disqualified, and I didn't find out about it till the race was well over. So that's probably the biggest disappointment I've ever had. And
what year was that?
Go ahead.
What year was that again?
As I say, I had it made, and I had to push it. I think I had a caution or two before, and if I would have just stayed in third place, I would have been on the team. Instead, I go for second.
I see.
I think, as I mentioned, I got disqualified after the race. So I went home. And didn't do very much after that. I raced a few times in nationals, And I think my last race was in 85, National 15K. But by that time, I was well past my prime.
So it sounds like your level of involvement or participation just kind of gradually dwindled instead of suddenly ending?
Right, it gradually dwindled. I race in a bunch of senior meets and an occasional national if it was close enough. I didn't have to travel too far. So basically I was through top-notch competing and did seniors races until finally I think what ended me is I had a back problem, a herniated disc, and after that many other problems I won't go into, but many other. So I'm still alive and kicking at age 81, in good health after many problems. I've only had cancer 8 times. Foreskin, 2 thyroid, and 2 lung.
Oh my goodness. Well, you are a survivor.
I am definitely a survivor.
Absolutely. So how many total years of race walking did you participate in?
Let's see. I started in 51 and ended in 85, with a couple of years in between where I didn't compete, maybe 2.
So almost 34 years?
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. That's a very long career in athletics.
Yep.
Well, I read that you recently attended a race walking event in 2011.
Let's see. Yeah, I guess it was last year, the National 50. Maybe it was early this year. Must have been last year. It was locally, so I attended. I was sort of a guest of honor.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, how does it feel to still, be remembered and to still be asked to participate in some way?
Well, I hope people remember, but it's a long time ago. As you know, Tom's having another reunion here in Austin in October, I guess it is.
Yes.
But unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to attend. I wish I would.
Oh, that's too bad. I was looking forward to meeting you.
As I say, Tom has been so wonderful. I can't believe what he does.
Absolutely. He's been very instrumental to this project.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Rudy, how do you think your life would be different if you had not been an elite athlete?
Well, you know what? One of the reasons I left the Air Force to join United, I thought my career progression would be better for retirement with the United rather than the Air Force, so that's why I changed. But I also wanted to continue my racing and training, and I was able to do that with United by scheduling my trips, so I would be able to work out whether I was in Milwaukee, Chicago, Philadelphia, New York, or Boston, or wherever, or Hawaii. That was the best part.
Oh, wonderful. I'd love to go walking in Hawaii.
Yeah. So anyway. But right now, I say I'm retired, 21 years? Just relaxing and enjoying life.
Well, that sounds good, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what were your experiences with the amateur rules, the rules for amateurism, back in the 60s? And what do you think about how those rules have changed?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Back then, we were amateurs. And right now, when they allow professional basketball players to play, and you name it, that doesn't set right with me at all.
And why is that? Can you...
Because we were supposedly amateurs back then, and we were. I mean, if we got a pair of track shoes from Adidas, that was it. And now everybody's a professional, some more professional than others. So it's changed quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, we just wrapped up, or, you know, the games just wrapped up in London yesterday. Did you get a chance to watch the race walking events?
I accidentally caught the women's race walk. I recorded it, and that was interesting. But the other two race walkers, I had to go on the internet to find out the results. They may have been on television, but I didn't record them because I didn't know when or if they would be recorded. I think YouTube has a bit on them now, so maybe there's something there I can look.
Mm-hmm, I'm sure. Well, what one piece of advice would you give to today's Olympic hopeful?
What advice?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, train hard and never give up.
Well, you're one that never gave up, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
Between the career and a family, I had a bunch of interruptions, but it all worked out just for the good.
Well, what was the impact of your race walking on your relationships or on your careers?
Oh, I don't think it had much effect at all.
Mm-hmm. What about vice versa? What was the impact of your careers or your relationships on your race walking?
Oh, I'm not sure how to answer that. No. As I say, I dedicated quite a bit of my life to race walking, and as a result, I had to bypass a lot of things. And, but that's what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, looking back at 68, what do you think was the historical significance of 68?
Well, I think as far as the track team goes, it was one of the best track and field teams we ever fielded. Of course, it was the first one in a Spanish-speaking country, I think,
mm-hmm.
and at altitude, so that affected everybody. But other than that, it was another Olympics.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to tell us about today?
Oh, let's see. I think we've covered just about everything.
I think so. Pretty thorough. Well, thank you so much, Rudy, for being generous with your time and with your memories. We really appreciate it. I'm going to go ahead and shut the recorder off now, and then I'll keep you on the line.